Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening calls. If you're listening to us online and you want to join us on the live call, you might want to pick up the phone and dial quickly. We've got some open lines, but they are starting to fill up. That number, 347-884-8327. That'll get you in on the live call. And again, there are some lines open, but they're starting to fill up. Once you're on that call, press 1 on your phone with a question, a comment, a topic, whatever you've got tonight. Lisa will screen your call, and we're going to be getting to those here in just a little bit. Joining me tonight, and the topic on the show this evening, is Brad Extem. He's the founder and CEO of FAS. We're going to be talking about the FAS, all about fuel contaminants, dirt, air, vapor, water, how all those things affect your injection system in your engine, and how the FAS can help take care of that. So let's get right to it tonight. Again, if you want to join in, 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, press 1 with a question, a comment, a topic, whatever you've got. Lisa will screen your call, and we'll be getting to those shortly. Brad, welcome to the program tonight.
Well, hello, Kevin, and I appreciate you having me back.
Well, great to have you on here, and you know, your product and your background and your knowledge is pretty technical. We had you on the live show last weekend, but I always feel kind of rushed on that show when we've got something technical. This show, we've got a lot more time. We don't have to take any breaks. We will get to some calls, but I just like this format better because we can really get down into details, and I know you've got a lot of knowledge in this area, so I want to get down to what it is we're going to talk about tonight.
Well, I appreciate it, and that time did go by fast. I blinked and it was over, and you were telling me to get off the phone.
I know. That's what always happens. You know, you just kind of start to get into things, and you know, I know I have a lot of questions in my mind and things I want to cover and things I want to talk about. Before you know it, you've got to get to a break. We come back, we do it again, and then a half hour goes by so fast. And here, we've got an hour. We've got nothing else to do. No, we don't have to watch the clock for breaks or anything like that. And it really is a much better format when we're talking about something technical. So I'm looking forward to it.
What's really nice about it, a lot of your viewers, they called in and they had a lot of good questions after the XM and Cirrus, you know, because we have our technicians in. We have Rick Catron that was on with you last time. He's here on the phones. And Aaron Miller and Brent Moreland, he does some R&D with us and all that. And Jeff, and they're all here tonight.
Excellent. Excellent. We really appreciate that because we know that when we do these kind of shows, people have questions immediately. Some maybe they can't get through because a lot of times we have a lot of questions. Others may not want to ask the question. You know, they'd rather do it one-on-one. And
And everybody, you know, we like instant gratification. So we really appreciate the fact that you brought your people in again to ask.
I had to feed them.
Well, of course. Of course you did. So we're going to get to some questions. You and I are certainly going to talk about a lot of things. But why don't we give out a phone number now? If somebody's listening and maybe you don't want to wait, you know, on hold, or you want to do your question one-on-one, how can they get a hold of somebody over there at your place?
Well, we have our 800 number, and that's 866-769-3747, which spells out Power HP. And then, you know, we have our Facebook, and then we have our website. But, you know, that number will get through to Jeff Catron, and then he'll kind of dispatch it to the type of call that it is. We are very specialized here.
Good, good. So that number again, 866-769-3747, and you get instant gratification. Somebody's waiting there for you now in case you don't want to ask the question here if you can't get through. Lines are filling up here, and the number here again, 347-884-8327 if you're listening online. Once you're on the call with us, go ahead and press 1 if you do want to jump in, and we'll get to those calls and questions here in just a little bit. Brad, why don't we start over from the beginning? Let's go back, and like most really good products, the FAST was designed and created to help solve a problem. You weren't walking around one day thinking, what can I build to make money? I mean, very few people, I think, actually do that. Most products are designed because somebody recognizes a problem. Usually it's a problem they're having themselves with something they do, and they realize, you know, when they solve the problem that they do have a good product. So take us back to the beginning and tell us about the system, how it got started, what it does.
The way it got started is that we were supposed to have purchased the engine of its time. And I don't want to go into mentioning a engine type, but whenever we speak individually, we brought that up, and they, oh, yeah, I had exactly the same thing with that engine and all that. And we were supposed to have the engine of its time. And when you'd first take off, you know, after sitting overnight or sitting for some time, the engine would perform fairly well. For about, you know, anywhere, it'll vary from 45 minutes to half an hour, and it'll run really smooth. And when you have a full tank of cool fuel, there's reasons for that, and where it has not been agitating going down the road. Then we'd start noticing that it would labor a little bit more, doing the same job. It wasn't running quite right. And I started driving a truck, and like I said on the radio, I probably shouldn't say it, but I started driving when I was 15. And not legally.
Right.
And
yeah.
And it would just labor, and when you're behind the wheel, only 10 hours a day, we know that that's not quite true. But when you become tuned in with that truck, you know when it's running right and you know when it's not. And we'd also notice that the manifold pressure was not, we would lose about 2 to 3 pounds of manifold pressure from when we first started to when we was going down the road. We'd also notice a smoke. It would smoke, you know, but it was inconsistent, the performance. And the thing about performance is, and don't think of it just as horsepower, because that's, you know, a lot, what a lot of people think of engine performance, it's the output of the engine in the way of temperatures, you know, exhaust temperatures, emissions, fuel mileage, and power, and just the way that the engine's overall performance is.
Right.
And we would get going down the road, and we was like, what's going on? So we kept going into different shops around the country, and our symptoms, they said, sound like air and fuel. And if
okay.
you go under a engine manufacturer's troubleshooting guide and look under low horsepower, inconsistent performance, hard starts, excessive smoke, low fuel mileage, poor throttle response, and there's probably a few more that I forgot, it'll have your it'll have a list of items to check. And one thing that's common under each one of them was air and fuel or fuel restriction, but we didn't know it at this time.
Okay.
And they kept changing fittings, checking fittings, and when it was in the shop, it was running great. Then we thought we had it fixed. We go down the road. We got it going. I mean, you get your hopes up, and this is, and then it would start running the same way. And then they started changing the 90 degrees fittings, because this every 90 degree fitting, and there's variables, the people's belief on this, and I'm going to do a test to find out exactly. But every 90 degree fitting is worth about 13 feet of fuel line restriction.
You know, it's interesting because one of the first things I learned from Bruce Mallinson, and, you know, I started to find out that physics, when it comes to an engine, is pretty consistent. And one of the first things we started talking about with him was exhaust restriction, and he does the same thing with a 90 degree in an exhaust. He can tell you exactly how many feet of straight pipe that equates to in restriction. And then when I started talking with Bruce about the FAS, he said the same thing happens in fuel lines. So it really is just physics, and it makes a lot of sense when you see it.
I totally agree with you. And what you're looking at on a 90 degree, you're looking at what they call eddy currents. It creates turbulence, and it kind of it has the flow of whatever it is, the air or the fuel, fighting against itself. And that's what's going on. Now, another rule to remember, because whenever you speak to Bruce, before they knew us, they would enlarge their filters and their fuel lines. And this is cutting down on restriction. And one of the rules of thumb is every time you double your orifice, your diameter, you quadruple your flow.
Wow.
So it's dynamics that change. You just don't double your flow. It quadruples your flow.
Right, right.
And when we were going in and we started educating ourselves on what was going on instead of just going to HUD, and following their footsteps, because after a while we were killing ourselves with downtime. And we found out they were looking for air. So we asked them, what about the air in my suction side filter? When I take it off, it's never full to the top. And we got a patented answer from everybody. Oh, it's supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be that way. It just accepts it that way.
Yeah. you know, a lot of times you get that answer when somebody doesn't really know the answer. Oh, it's supposed to be that way. And actually, the reason that that's the answer is because up until that point, nobody's really thought about it. Nobody's ever really questioned. Why is that there? I mean, why isn't that filter full when we take it off?
And it should be, just like a secondary filter when it's under pressure. But what it's doing is collecting air just like dirt. And when you have a full filter on your truck, it'll run the best. And think of filter restriction this way. When you have a clean filter on your truck, the engine performs best. It runs better, throttle response, fuel mileage, and as that filter gets dirty little by little, you lose horsepower, you lose fuel mileage, you lose injector life little by little. You get it to where you can't live with it anymore, or you just cut it off because you know it's going to get there, and you put a clean filter on, and guess what you pick up is performance.
Right.
Now, if you go to Cummins, Caterpillar, Detroit, Isuzu, any of them, whenever they test an engine, their fuel tank is up on top of the building with a positive feed, so there's no restriction. The fuel tank is not going down the road agitating either. That's where you get the majority of your air. That's why whenever they dyno and you take it in and they say it runs great, because it does, because there's very little air in the fuel when you're sitting still. It only takes 3 to 5 minutes for the air to rise out of the fuel. Then they put the hot aerated return back to another tank. The hotter a fuel becomes, the thinner it becomes, and whenever it's under a restriction, it gets more vapor from heat also. So I don't know if you want to ask me any questions, because we look like a filtration system, but we're a little bit more than that.
Well, you know what was interesting when you say that now, after talking to you on the live show, it makes more sense, because what you talked about on the live show was that we need to get all of the contaminants out of the fuel, water, dirt, and air. I mean, you described air as a contaminant, and we need to get it out. And when you said that, it kind of clicked in my mind. That makes a lot of sense. We've always known that we want to get the dirt out of there. We've always known that we want to get the water out of there, and we have systems that do that. They'll take out the dirt and the water and contaminants like that, but I never looked at air as a contaminant. When you described it that way, it made a lot of sense, and really, you designed a filter to take out all of the contaminants, including the air. And when we talked about that, it really made a lot of sense for me.
We just had Randy Cole and Justin Testa from the National Hot Rod Diesel Association in here, and they were filming. They brought in a film crew this weekend. And Randy has a shop also, and he understands fast system now, but he didn't understand it like that before, because you should have seen his eyes just light up when he understood what air was doing to injectors. And blowing tips off, cutting them off, causing galling and scoring. And when we related to him as a contaminant, he was just, wow. But if you go and you research, and just like you said earlier, you kind of responded to, air in the filter is just supposed to be that way. And very few manufacturers speak of it in the public eye in the way of a contaminant. But when you go back and you start digging, and through Raycor's research, Caterpillar's research, Cummins, Milwaukee School of Engineering, they're the number one hydraulic school in the country, and they estimate that 75% of hydraulic system failures are due to air. And what is the fuel system? It's a hydraulic
system. It's hydraulics.
And, we just stumbled onto something here. It's basically just trying to fix something. So go ahead.
Yeah, but I was going to say that there are several things that happen here. I mean, one, we're always looking for fuel economy. It's one of the things that we talk about and work on a lot. But I really get excited when we find a product that has multiple benefits, that, yes, we're going to pick up some fuel economy, but on the other hand, we're also going to cut down on maintenance. This is just, it's good for the engine to supply that fuel rail with a good, solid, clean supply of fuel constantly. Clean meaning, and now I get this, no dirt, no water, no contaminants, no air. And I think you used a phrase the last time we talked, the fuel is polished. So we get multiple benefits from this, which really makes a lot of sense.
Well, there's no one out there, and you know what? Filter manufacturers do great taking the dirt and water out. And what we do is that we have different size pumps on our units. So the engine only needs so much, and the return fuel leaving our unit is what allows the air to separate and send it back to the fuel tank. And in this process, like you said, we're sitting there polishing the fuel at 150 or 220 or 260 gallons an hour, and the multiple passes through the filter element is cleaning the fuel even more, because there's not one filter out there that gets all the contaminants on the first pass. And we're going to increase the life of your injectors. And do you remember back in the 80s, if you get diesel fuel on your hands, you can hardly wash it off with lava soap.
Yeah.
Well, it was so thick.
I kind of wish we had that stuff back. I kind of like that fuel, actually.
Well, it so did our engines. And we also had looser tolerances back then on our injection systems. A B-model Caterpillar would run forever. And now what they've done, they've made the tolerances tighter, so we needed that lubricity from that old number two fuel. But then they've cut the lubricity out, making our fuels thinner, which it's a double-edged, it's a sword that's just cutting through the metal. It's galling and scoring the metals. not providing the lubrication, so we actually help with lubrication. Do we eliminate the problems? No. But we help dramatically, and we help with keeping the injector tips on the injectors also.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize how tight the tolerances had become on the injectors. And you know, it's funny because things change in the industry, and the more things I study, the more people I talk to that really know what they're doing, the more I find out about these things. And then I'm always surprised when I find out about them. How come we didn't know that? How come that this isn't common knowledge or general knowledge? And it's why I keep seeking out people, not so much products. I seek out people, and then we typically end up finding the product to help solve a problem. You know, we have a guy who was just a great cat mechanic for years and became an owner operator and came to our CMC, and I got a chance to talk to him, and he brought up something so simple that the practice of pouring fuel into a fuel filter when we change it. I mean, we've done that for years. Otherwise, the engine's next to impossible to start if you don't do that. But he said the tolerances have become so tight on these injectors that that's a horrible practice, because when we pour it in, we're actually introducing unfiltered fuel right up into the injectors in the beginning. And he said they were seeing a lot of injector failures because of that practice.
And there's a test that I can give your audience to give them a feel of what we're talking about. You know, we started describing how air collects and then passes through. And I don't know if you want to cover that again, but one of the tests that I give you guys that we were talking to when they were calling after the show is take your fuel filter off. And it's going to go a little bit against what he said, but fill up your fuel filter, the suction side, so it's full. And the best way to do it is to pour through the outside and let it drain through to where it's filtered. But most
right.
of our engines have secondary filter. But when that filter's full, that is when that engine's going to perform its best. You always have some air going through, and then after it starts performing worse, you know, that hour and a half later, pull over and do it again and watch how it'll start running better. And that's a little bit of what we'll give you.
Right. That makes sense.
But where do you want to go from here, Kevin?
Well, what do you say we take a couple calls and let the callers decide where we go from here?
I'm new to this, so you have to guide me.
That's all right, no problem. Let's do that. We can answer a couple questions and see where we head. Many times that's just, you know, once we get started on questions, we just stick there. If not, we'll answer a couple questions. And I always have questions, but I'll let the listeners jump in and do theirs first. So why don't we start off in Texas. Danny, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. Hope y'all are staying warm.
Trying to, but we're trying to stay as far south as we can, but if I go any farther south, I'm going to need a passport.
I hear you, my friend. I hear you. I know. I'm tired of the cold. I'm going down the road right now with an aerosol can spraying, burning up the ozone, saying, come on, global warming.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
But my question is, I've seen the FAST system on advertisement, on pictures, never actually seen one up front. It appears there's a motor on top of it, and if that motor were to go out, I'm guessing it's an electrical motor, if it were to go out, will you still have fuel flowing through your system, or are you just going to be stuck on the side waiting for a wrecker? I would guess that fuel is still going through the system, but how, or will it just shut you down there?
Well, that's a good question, and sometimes I forget to even put that out there. There's a bypass built in to where it'll bypass the motor, and it'll go into operation just like it is now. It'll make a good filtration system, but you're not removing any of the air or the vapor, and you'll feel the performance loss back to where you were before. Now, the quality of that motor is a 15,000 to 17,000 hour life. If you figure a 50 mile an hour average on 10,000 hours, that's a half a million miles. So you can go from there. And we have about a 2% failure rate. We
have a 4-year warranty on this, and we have a little less than 2% failure rate. But if you run it long enough, every one of the motors will eventually quit, and we have an easy way to have that motor replaced. But that's where we stand.
And if you can't answer this question, that's fine. But what's the price range on a Pass System Class 8 truck?
They run on the HD series, which has the larger filters. I believe it's from about $684 on up, depending on what kind of gallon per hour. But that price covers probably 95% of the market in the Class 8.
Yes, sir. Okay. And this one might pertain to Kevin. Do you have any? What does it typically run for installation like that out there at the Tennessee location, Kevin?
Oh, boy, you would have to hit me with that one. Let me check and see if we've got that on the most recent price list or not, I might have to answer that here in a little bit. Brad, one of the
things... Do you mind if I help you out?
Sure, go ahead. Thank you.
Do you mind if I help you out?
That'd be great, Brad. Go ahead.
All right. Usually, it's typically, and I'm not going to give you a price, but typically it's a 4 to 5 hour job. And I use the words typically, okay? You know, if you have a filtration system where you have a remote filter down on the frame, the unit takes place of that filter that's down on the frame. And then you have to add a return line kit. And we have them in-house. They retail for $180. And that's the return line. That's where your return fuel goes back with the air in it, and that's where we're polishing the fuel that Kevin was talking about.
Right.
But there's some variables to what I just said, so please don't lock me into that. But it's typically a 4 to 5 hour job.
Okay. All right, well, I appreciate y'all's time, and great show, Kevin. First time calling in on this one, and it's I like the way it works so far.
Well, thanks for calling.
Danny, be careful.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
And Danny and Brad, one of the things we're trying to do at Truck City Service is because we really specialize in the aftermarket products that I talk about here on the show, the things that I believe in, the things that I use, is we're trying to take the guesswork for the end user out of that install cost. And what we try to do is we try to get enough installations, since we're going to be doing the same things over and over, that we put a standard price on an install, and it's almost unheard of at most shops because there are a lot of variables. You know, sometimes you can knock one out in 4 hours. I've seen it take 8 hours sometimes, but we want to take that variable out of it because we want people to be able to look at it and say, okay, here's my investment. Here's what it's going to cost me to head on down the road with this thing installed. Here's what I'm going to save, and here's my break even. And we're big on that. How much am I going to save in this first year? So most of our products, once we've been doing it for a while, we put a standard install on it. And then we kind of take the risk. If it's going to take us, you know, 6 hours because a job got a little more difficult, it's not going to matter. We're still going to do it at that same price. So I'm not sure if we have that yet. I have Lisa checking with Robert to see if we've got a standard price on this yet or not.
Our technical department can help you out with that also to try to get something up front. And one of the things
good.
That they shoot, they shoot very honest. We would rather tell you the truth than, you know, than try to BS you to get to buy our product and be unhappy. We always understate and overperform.
Yeah, and that's a great policy. It really is, because we do know there are variables, and you know, we've installed a couple of these, and I've seen some jobs that are just certainly more difficult than others, which is pretty typical anytime you put a wrench to a truck anyway. But like I say, we really were focusing on that idea of we do a few things, we do it really well, this is what we specialize in, so we're able to give you the price. And if it takes longer, we're going to eat that one.
And Kevin, I really like that flat rate idea. I do. I think that's still honest.
And again, it's difficult for shops that only do something now and then. I can certainly understand why they can't do it. But for us, again, we focus on certain things and we can standardize where that's really what we like to do with all the products. And if we don't have that done yet on the fast, we certainly will soon. Let's go to Nebraska. Elvis, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I had a couple questions about it. I've been thinking about getting the fast. And I wanted to, like, does it improve fuel mileage at all? Like, it only separates fuel and air.
Well, it will. Let me put it like this. It catches people off guard when we're at a show. You know, we're going to be at the Louisville Truck Show coming up. And when they ask that, the first thing that we'll tell you is that we guarantee you zero on fuel economy. And people look at us, and we just shoot straight right from the beginning. Now, most people, and from what we feel and what we've learned, listen to the people and the people that we use to go from, or the ones that say, yeah, I'm getting 5.83 miles to the gallon. They know that second decibel. They're not just saying, yeah, I'm getting 5.5 to 6. They really know what they're getting, and that's one of the nice things that I like about your program on letstruck.com, because they can learn from it. We typically pick up a solid 4/10, and there's a solid 4/10 of a mile per gallon to be had. But if you think about what we're doing, we're removing air and putting fuel in place of it. So if you want to go running, you know, balls to the wall, we're going to get you there faster, but you're going to burn some fuel.
True.
Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
It's a lot like many of the performance products, you know, we've been using over the years now. What we found is, there is certainly potential there for fuel savings. There's also a potential for some loss in fuel economy if you get a little crazy with the right foot. So these products make the engine run better. They make the engine healthier. And if we drive it properly, we will see a fuel economy gain. And this one, again, just makes sense. When you deliver a good, solid load of clean fuel to the rail and to the injectors, the engine's going to run better. We're going to have better throttle response and better performance, and we'll be able to achieve better fuel economy with that if we drive it right.
And I'm glad you brought up performance. And what I want to tell everybody, and this is a disclosure, we do not improve the engine above its performance that it is in a test cell. What we do is we pick up the performance that it loses going from a test cell to going down the road. And most of the time, we're picking up 25 to 30 horse to where you'll notice a gear on the hills, a gear increase of where you were before. And fuel economy, emissions, the way the truck shifts and sounds, the way, you know, when you're going to back up to a dock and it's sitting there vibrating the mirrors, you have to tap the throttle to get the mirrors even out. We take care of that. And fuel mileage, it comes about, fuel injection came about for two reasons, to inject a predetermined amount of fuel at a predetermined time. And air throws your volume off, and it throws off the timing. It retards your timing of when the fuel enters the cylinder. It's kind of like having air in your brake lines on your car. It's spongy. It's the same exact thing.
Elvis, you still with us?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, and I
got
to answer my question.
Well, let me give you a little bit more to your question. Hirschbach Trucking did some testing with us, and they picked up 4.5 tenths across the board, and that was with fleet drivers, where we usually pick up a little bit more with owner-operators, but they picked up a solid 4.5 tenths average on all the trucks that they tested with.
Those are good numbers. That's a good test, too, when you're using fleet drivers who really, and this isn't a criticism of fleet drivers, but they have no real direct incentive for getting good fuel economy. And that's that's a challenge in the industry. You put a guy out there and you pay him by the mile. So the more miles he drives, the more money he makes. And then the next biggest cost we have in the operation is fuel, and he has no real incentive to get better fuel economy. Give him a performance product, and it's likely that you could see fuel economy go down. So it was certainly a good test to see that go up in that situation. You know, you mentioned something else that's kind of a pet peeve of mine here, and that is fuel economy numbers. I always ask people for their average, and sometimes I'll get very specific and say, what was your 30-day running average for the last 30 days? Because fuel economy right now in January, the 30-day average, is going to be different than the last 12-month average. Because that last 12-month average, we had really good weather in there, and now we've got really lousy weather all over the country. So our 30-day average for 99% of the people I talk to is probably going to be worse than their 6-month average or their 12-month average. And a lot of times people will say, just like you said, well, I get 5.5 to 6. Well, first of all, this is kind of my pet peeve, that's not an average. That's a range. I want an average. I want one number. Ranges can be important. What I usually look at is, first of all, an average for a specific period of time. Then I like to know the range. In the last 30 days, what was the highest fuel economy you achieved and what was the lowest? That gives me your range in the last 30 days. And your average, is it going to be right in the middle? Some people think, well, the average must be right in the middle of those two. No, it's not. The average, you know, your range might be 6 to 7, just to keep an easy number. Probably I would much rather hear something like, you know, 6.12 to 7.08. But that doesn't mean that your average is going to be right in the middle of those two. It could be much closer to the higher low side, depending on how many times we achieved that higher or lower number. So when we're trying to dial in fuel economy down to the tenths, you know, and when we start getting 2 tenths or less, it really becomes impossible to measure that with accuracy in an over-the-road operation. That we can attempt to, we can talk about, you know, 1 or 2% fuel economy gains, but there are way too many variables. And if we're going to attempt to dial in those smaller gains, and I think it's very important that we do, because 1/10, even though we can't accurately measure 1/10 overall, 1/10 is $1,000 a year. To me, that's a lot of money.
It is.
So even though we can't really accurately, consistently measure that kind of a gain, with enough feedback from a lot of people, we can get pretty close. And in order to do that, we need to get specific about our fuel economy. And we need to get specific about the way we measure it. And we need to look at the numbers a different way. We can't measure our fuel economy today against what we were getting 4 or 5 months ago. Because I have people who consistently lose a full mile per gallon this time of year. They run primarily in the Midwest or West Coast, Northwest, where we've got lousy weather, and those kind of conditions really hurt fuel economy, which is fine. We know that's going to happen. And if that's the part of the country we run in, we can't really change it. But we want to know. I mean, last year at this time, if our average was 6.23 and we've made some changes throughout the year, and now we can look and see our average is 6.72, maybe we've lost a half mile per gallon in the last 3 months, but we're doing better than we were this time last year in the same conditions. So we really do need to get specific about it, and many times, you know, it can get kind of frustrating. Somebody will either claim gains that I know just aren't true. I mean, we're not going to put a product on any product and pick up a mile per gallon. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It takes, we look for small incremental changes with a lot of products and a lot of techniques to get fuel economy up slowly over time. When I hear those, you know, we all like really great testimonials, but at some point I just know they're wrong. Somebody's either over-enthusiastic about something or they're not measuring their fuel economy right. And we want to keep it real on this show. And I know you guys do the same thing.
May I respond to a couple of the things you said?
Sure.
When it comes to fuel mileage, and I really like how the ways that you go about it, and when it comes to reporting fuel mileage, we get those mile and a half to, you know, and those ridiculous claims, and I'm going to cover that one in just a second. But the people that we listen to are the ones that are keeping those second digits, you know, the second digits behind the decibel. But the ones that we even key on even more than that are the ones that keep those records and they're running a dedicated route. And those are the ones that we start, oh, really, when we hear that, we key in and we start building a pattern, you know, listening. And there's been a pattern established from people that don't know each other reporting into us. We have a great relationship with our customers. We treat them the way that we want to be treated and the way that they want to be treated. And whenever we're looking into things, we look at it from a consumer's point of view because I'm a consumer myself, so it's great to be able to look at that. Now, there's a couple engines out there that will blow your mind because we are very conservative in what we tell people. Because we don't want anyone coming back and say, you know, you told us this, and I only got this. So that's why we shoot on the conservative side. But if there's any of your customers out there that are still running the old STC Cummins, we regularly hear over, and we don't hear it that much anymore because they're like dinosaurs, but we do typically break over a mile per gallon on those, and that's pretty consistent. Whereas like the BNC model Caterpillar, we'll usually pick up between 7 and 9 tenths of a mile per gallon. But that is just the way that those engines work, and there's reasons for it over why we get those kind of increases on that engine over unit-injected electronic engine. Now, with electronic engines, yeah, we feel very comfortable with telling people that there's 4 tenths of a mile per gallon to be had, and we will guarantee you zero on the fuel economy. But on
right.
the same on the other side, we're going to help out your fuel system a lot more in increasing the life of the injection system, the pump, the injectors, over where the older mechanicals, they will last longer themselves because the tolerances are not as tight as the new ones.
Good stuff. We, you know, there's, I just looked up. I kind of got on a roll there myself, and I looked up and realized we had a bunch of calls here. Let's get back to them. Let's go to Indianapolis. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Hello, David. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a question for Brad. Brad, I've had your FAST system on 2 Cummins ISXs, and I just bought a Detroit Series 60, and I'm wondering if I can use the 200-gallon per hour, I believe is the spec for the ISX, if I can use that unit on the Detroit Series 60 without any issue.
And the Detroit 60, what year is it?
It's a 2003 pre-EGR.
Okay. Yeah, you can definitely use it on that one. You only want to, and it should be already preset to the proper pressure because the Detroit 60 and ISX we put the same pressure to. You don't need that much flow, but all it's going to do is polish the fuel that much more, so you're good to go. Because you had a 600 ISX before, is that correct?
Actually, 400 and a 450, and then the one I'm running it in right now as I'm talking to you, we've bumped it up to 670 in the ECM. So.
Okay. Well, the ISX is until you get up to the 600 and where you were before, they'll take the 150 gallon per hour, and just like the Detroit will, but the one that you have will work perfect for your Detroit.
Sounds great. I also wanted to give a little bit of a plug for you guys. Last winter, I was in this truck, and I run the Midwest, a lot of 80 and 90. And in the winter, I was having nothing but problems before I put the FAST system on this truck. I would have up to 2 bottles of fuel treatment in the tanks and still run into fuel gelling and the truck smoking and dying and all kinds of issues related to the fuel and the temperature outside. But after putting the FAST system on, I've ran this truck down to negative 10 degrees indicated on the dash with a headwind, with no fuel treatment in the tanks, and never a hiccup, never smoke coming out the stack. It runs like a top. It's just fantastic.
Well, you don't have to stop, David. You can keep going. You can sell it better than I can, so I'm just going to shut up for a while.
Well, I absolutely love your unit. I've had them on our last 2 trucks. We just bought the 03 Detroit, and we plan on putting it on it as well. I really wouldn't run a truck out here that I owned without one of your units on it, and it does a fantastic job. You notice it from the very day you put it on. You notice the difference. The truck runs smoother. It idles smoother. It accelerates smoother. And, yeah, you're right. You definitely pick up the fuel economy. My average since owning the truck on mine is 6.94. I use Kevin's fuel gauges to track every tank since we purchased the truck, and really appreciate your product. And not only that, but the way you stand behind it as well. We had an issue with our last unit on our Kenworth with the ISX, and we got it taken care of, no problem. And you guys really, really stand behind your stuff, and I appreciate that.
David, you made my night. Thank you.
All right. Well, you
fantastic.
Guys
fantastic. Let's see. We are off to Canada this time. Harold, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Doing good tonight. What's on your mind?
Okay, I was just talking with Rick there a couple days ago. But, Brad, on your warranty on your motors, did I hear you right? You said 4 years or 1 year?
Here's how we work. It's available whenever you purchase the unit. We want you to purchase it through an authorized or VIP dealer, which you can see on our website, okay? Because we are really trying to – we do not want all the business out there. There's certain business that we don't want, or we want to do it properly. But we want it to channel through our dealers, our authorized dealers, like Bruce Mallinson at Pittsburgh Power, and because we've had units sold for the wrong application, and it's given us black eyes. So we're really telling people when you purchase through an authorized or VIP dealer, it comes from with an automatic 1 year warranty from the date of manufacture. Now, whenever you mail in your product registration with a copy of your receipt, because we want to see who it went through and we want to keep control of where our product's going for certain other reasons also, and I'd be more than happy to discuss them if you want to open that up. But then you get a 4 year warranty from the time that you purchased it for your Class A truck. And we have lifetime warranties if you have a diesel pickup. But we really want to control. We just don't want anyone out there selling our product because we've had some of them give us a bad name and a black eye, and we want to really control that.
Oh, I see. Okay. No, because I've got an issue in here. I put one on here in February of the previous year, and I was in Toronto this weekend, and she quit working. The motor basically burnt up or something. I'm not sure what until I get back into Edmonton there and get it looked after where I purchased it.
Okay.
And I mean, it's 30 below up here right now with wind chills. We're into the 40 below mark. I'm running across Canada. You know, it's not functioning, but it's doing its job as a filtration unit. There isn't an issue with that whatsoever. I mean, you won't even know. If I didn't have the gauge on the dash telling me what pressure it's producing and saw that it's at a negative right now, I would have never known it wasn't on other than, you know, starting the truck, you don't hear it. Where now you start the truck, it's very quiet. There's no buzzing. That the pump's working. Plus, the gauge is telling me it's not working. But I'm just curious on that warranty, on that, you know, I'm not quite sure why it failed here, but it just seemed like the motor was loading up, blew a fuse, and then it finally blows a fuse now, so it just, I mean, it doesn't even rotate, and I'll deal with that when I get back.
What engine do you have it on?
Cat, 3406.
Which one, though?
The 150.
Okay, but is it a 550 cat?
Yes, 550 cat, E model.
Okay. And one thing you might want to do in that extreme cold is that we have ports for a coolant to heat the
plot. I'm aware of that. That's all been hooked up. I have had that hooked up since the day I put it on. So.
Okay. Let's look into that motor because, you know, there's a lot of times that we get blamed. And some, you know what, we're not perfect. We do have pumps that do fail. We can isolate the problem and find out if it is us or not. And a lot of times when our tech guys, you know, you've been speaking to, they can find something else wrong that's affected it. So, we'll stand up, we'll stick up there, and we'll take the hit if it's a pump. We'll take care of you.
Yeah, no, I'm sure of that. I talked with Rick there. We had quite a conversation on the phone there. We went through the whole installation. I told him what was done and so forth. But, you know, the bigger fuel lines, which you talked about earlier in the show, that's something I played with almost 10 years ago. Like, you know, most trucks come in with number 6, number 8 lines. I run number 10 to the pump, 8s from each tank into a T, and then a 10 from there. Because I've noticed that with fuel starvation, aeration. I mean, I ran a Raycor for years. Nothing but aeration problems with the fast. I mean, the truck runs quieter. It's smoother. Mileage on, I've picked up, it varies depending on, my loads are heavy, though, which is hard to judge. But I know on the dyno, on the different engines that we've put these on, upwards of 20 to 55 horsepower increase. So if you increase the power, you drive it properly, you will get better fuel mileage. If you drive it with your foot in the floor, well, it's going to cost you fuel, but I mean,
Harold,
power is money.
Harold, how heavy do you get?
140,000.
Yeah, that's heavy. And I would, you know, we have some haulers like that, and I would tell them, I said, if you get anything, be happy. We'll help you out with the things that you mentioned, but I'm not going to, when you're that heavy, I won't even put my name on 4/10 being there for you. I'd probably cut it back. I cut it in half to zero.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking for performance and how well it runs. I mean, right now with the weight I carry, a yearly average is about 5.3. In the summertime with the better fuels, I'll get up about 6. If I'm empty, I'll run close to 9. But I mean, I'm not going to complain. I mean, it's just it runs so much better with it on, and if it quits running, you can still keep going. It's not going to shut you down. That's the part that I like about it. When I took it apart a while back to understand how that relay works inside that bypass, I mean, it's simple but ingenious. I mean, very simple, but it works.
That's how my mind works, okay? So.
Yeah, very, very simple.
Fantastic. Harold, hey, thanks for the call, and I'm sure we'll get that taken care of. And by the way, those are fantastic numbers for the operation that you are running. No question about that. Let's go to Kansas this time. Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I got a three-part question. One is this a cartridge or is it a spin-on filter? Two is how often do you have to change them? And three, what is the cost of the replacement filters?
All right. Yes, it is a spin-on filter. Both of them are. There's a water separator that you can drain, and then there's a fuel filter. They typically last, and I say typically, between 20 and 50,000 miles because we have a fuel pump that's allowing the engine to receive what it's supposed to be receiving while our filters are restricting, but our pump is using more of the element. And we have made it to where we do not lock you into our filters. Now, you'll get a better deal getting the fast filters because we buy so many of them, and we would like to make a little bit of money on them, but we look at the filters as more of a service item to take care of our customers. And these filters are usually run right around 2150, I believe. I am not usually in on the pricing side of it, and I'm trying to flip quickly, while I'm under pressure. But, yeah, they're around $22 for them. But we have a list of cross-references also, so you are not locked in with our filters.
Can you still use a cat filter on it?
Yes, we do have a cross-reference to cat. I'm looking right here, and I'm seeing Donaldson, Fleetguard, Wix, Simtech, and I'm trying to scroll real quick. I do know, I believe that there's a cat filter out there, but I do not have it listed. So let's act like they do not have one, but I believe they do.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Hey, Brad, we are just about out of time. You know, it was nice having the extra time, but we're still going to run out of time. I know we did get a lot covered. Something you mentioned is that there's a filter and also a water separator that can be drained. How often should it be drained?
That's it. Well, if you get a big gulp of water, you want to drain it right away. But I drained it every time. When I was on the road, I drained it every time I filled up because I already had my hood open to clean my windshield. So
okay. It
just took 30 seconds to drain it. So I would just drain it then, and then you can see what kind of fuel you picked up at the last stop, how much water is in it.
Got it. So you don't have to worry about draining it too often.
No, but, you know, the thing is, when it gets cold like this, it's better to drain it more often so when you shut it off, there's not, a dam of ice in there.
You're right. Right. That makes
sense. Because I started at 17 below zero.
You know, when he was talking about 20 and 30 below, nothing works right then. You know, I remember those days. I spent a lot of time in Northeast Ohio trucking and in the, you know, up into the Midwest and Wisconsin and Minnesota, and I really don't miss those days. Nothing works right in those kind of temperatures, including me.
Do you remember about 16 years ago when they shut the state of Kentucky down due to ice and...
I was in 1994, I believe. They called it the storm of the century. I was in Columbus, Ohio, and had, you know, I left the truck running all night, which is something I almost never do. Didn't stay in it because I couldn't keep it warm no matter what we did. I went in and got a room, but I left it running all night. Came out the next morning, it was still running. I thought I was all set. Got about 2 miles down the road. And the fuel was gelling so bad, I couldn't keep it running and had to get it inside. And I remember that storm well.
I had frozen burritos on, so they let me go on down the road because emergency items and foods, perishables, could go on. And I had frozen burritos, and I believe, if I remember correctly, it was about 40 below zero. And I would have put additives in at that time. I had this on, air separation system, and I had my heat, the coolant going through it. I would have put coolant in, additives in, but I could not get any because they were all sold out. So I'm at 40 below zero, and I did not even start to gel, and I could tell on my pressure gauges that I had good fuel flow.
Yeah, that's amazing. Hey, we're almost out of time, but we can run over a little bit. That's another nice thing about this show. And I see I want to get to one more call. Let's go to Illinois. Harold, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin, and I can't remember your name now.
Brad.
At any rate, yeah, Brad, that's his name. Hey, if your fuel starts getting real hot, then will that still work properly and will it still function the way it's supposed to? Or?
I'm having a hard time understanding the question on this end. I just couldn't understand it because of the phone or whatever.
If for some reason the fuel gets hot, does the system still work?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And we actually, the hotter your fuel, the more vapor you deliver to your engine. And we're going to help you out with lubricity by getting rid of that air and vapor. But you do not want hot fuel. But we will help you out with your hot fuel.
All right. Because like I was thinking, well, hot fuel, that will burn more complete. But then you lose out on some power. Then I was wondering if this would help take out some of the air and bring back the power. Or...
You'll pick up a good gear on the hill. And one of the biggest things that we sell on, and you kind of hit on it, when you have a full tank of cool fuel, and you just take off going down the road. It runs smoother, it's quieter, and it's stronger. And that's also when you're getting your best fuel economy. What we're going to do is keep it running like that a little bit better, but consistently throughout the day and night.
All right. All right. Well, that's
but we
all
do
I
help
had,
out with that.
All right.
Harold,
got
thank
it.
You.
All right. We are all out of time. And, Brad, again, I want to thank you for coming on and helping us out with this. And I also want to thank you for bringing in some people from your company to answer phone calls. And they're going to stick around for a little bit. I know we've got a lot more questions out there. So if people want to call and talk about it, get more of their questions answered one-on-one, what's that phone number?
It's 866-769-3747 is one way to get hold of us. The other way is our Facebook. You can go be friends on our Facebook, and you find out about events and new things coming out. And you can go to our Facebook, or you can go to fastride.com. Fast is in our name, Frank, Apple, Sam, RIDE.com.
Outstanding. And we will be talking to you again soon. Thanks again.
Kevin, thank you very much for having me again.
You're welcome. All right. Thanks, everybody. We're all out of time. The live show's coming up in just 30 minutes on SiriusXM. We'll see you there. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.